Hello and welcome to the Rhesus Medicine Podcast with me, Dr. Rhys Welnichuk, where I take medical topics and try to make them easier to remember. These podcasts are based on the YouTube videos and PDFs are available on Patreon. With that being said, let's get on with it. Interpretation of an electrocardiogram, known as an ECG or EKG, is a skill in medicine that is often overlooked. In this video, I'll provide a systematic approach to help you read them more confidently. The basics to remember are that each component of the ECG represents electrical activity within the heart, corresponding to different points in the cardiac cycle. For example, the P wave represents atrial depolarization, and we will look at each of these points in more detail as part of the interpretation. A normal 12-lead ECG is taken by using 4 limb electrodes and 6 chest electrodes. Each lead gives a slightly different view of the heart, with a positive deflection when the activity is towards that electrode and negative when it is away from it. Leads 1, AVL, V5 and V6 look at the lateral part of the heart, 2, 3 and AVF the inferior part, and V1 to V4 give a septal and anterior view. The first step is to ensure the correct patient information, the date and the calibration of the machine. The date and time are especially important because you may be looking at one of a series of ECGs, looking for changes over time. The calibration is normally 25 millimeters per second and 10 millimeters per millivolt. If these settings are adjusted before the ECG is taken, it can look completely different, so you need to check it before you start interpreting. Once they are confirmed, I start by looking at the axis because it is so easy to overlook. The overall direction of the electrical activity gives the axis, and is normally between minus 30 and 90 degrees. It could be normal, deviated to the left or to the right, or extremely deviated. A quick way to assess it is the quadrant method that allows you to quickly place the axis in one of the 4 quadrants just by looking at lead 1 and AVF. If both are positive, the axis must be in the lower right quadrant, therefore normal. If lead 1 is negative and AVF is positive, there is right axis deviation. If both are negative, there is extreme axis deviation. The only one needing a further step is if lead 1 is positive and AVF is negative, then the axis is in the upper right quadrant. And to distinguish left axis deviation from normal, you can look at lead 2. If it is negative, the axis is deviated to the left. Axis deviation can occur in many different conditions and is not specific, but looking at it first can alert you early that there could be further abnormalities. Next, we look at the rate. Each small square is 1 millimeter in width. On the standard speed of 25 millimeters per second, the small squares on the paper represent 40 milliseconds, and 5 of these together form bigger squares, therefore worth 200 milliseconds each. That means 5 of these big squares make up 1 second. So if one beat happens every 5 big squares, that's 1 beat in 1 second, so 60 beats in a minute. A shortcut is to divide 300 by the number of large squares between each QRS to get the approximate ventricular rate. This is easy if the rhythm is regular. If it's not, then instead count the number of QRS complexes over 10 seconds, then multiply it by 6 to get the number of beats in 1 minute. The normal rate is 60 to 100 beats per minute, with rates below that being called bradycardia and above that being tachycardia. That brings us nicely to rhythm, which basically means do the beats fall at regular intervals. To evaluate this, look at the gap between the QRS complexes, known as the RR interval. Is it the same size each time, or does it change? This is more obvious at normal heart rates, but can be tricky to distinguish at very low or very high heart rates. If the gap between beats changes throughout the ECG, then the rhythm is irregular. But the story doesn't end there. The irregularity can be present with no clear pattern, known as irregularly irregular, like atrial fibrillation, or regularly irregular, such as in some second-degree heart blocks. Looking at the QRS complexes evaluates the ventricular rhythm, but it's also important to evaluate the atrial rate and the communication between the atria and the ventricles, which is why I also include the P wave and PR interval when looking at the rhythm. The P wave represents atrial depolarization. The normal P wave should be positive in lead 2, have a duration of less than 120 milliseconds, an amplitude of less than 2.5 millimeters, and each P wave should be followed by a QRS complex. Some abnormalities can include an increased duration or amplitude of the P wave that may indicate left or right atrial dilatation respectively, or the absence of P waves entirely, such as in atrial fibrillation. The electrical activity then normally passes through the atrioventricular node, just before being conducted down into the ventricles and causing ventricular depolarization and contraction. The PR interval is the time between atrial depolarization and ventricular depolarization, and is measured from the start of the P wave to the start of the QRS complex. Its normal duration is between 120 and 200 milliseconds. A prolongation indicates slowing of the conduction between the atria and ventricles, for example, a first degree AV block. A shortening may suggest a condition with an accessory pathway, like Wolff-Parkinson-White. A variable PR interval suggests other forms of atrioventricular blocks. I'll leave a link to a video dedicated to heart blocks here. Next up is the morphology of the remaining components of the ECG. There is the QRS complex itself, which represents ventricular depolarization and is generally divided into narrow or widened. Normally, the electrical activity moves quickly through the conduction system and goes more slowly through the muscle tissue. Narrow complexes generally suggest the origin of that beat is supraventricular, while a wider QRS suggests either the activity is originating in the ventricles or there is a block in the conduction system carrying the electrical signal to one of the ventricles, and so to get to the other side must go through the myocardium. The latter is why left and right bundle branch blocks have a wide QRS morphology, and pacemakers will also traditionally have a morphology similar to left bundle branch block. Here is a comparison of left and right bundle branch blocks, and an easy way to remember the morphology of each is the mnemonic William Marrow. The voltage of the QRS complexes can also indicate pathology. Classically, large amplitudes in the precordial leads may point to left ventricular hypertrophy, while alternating amplitudes could indicate pericardial effusion. Q waves are the first negative deflection in the QRS. The R wave is a following upwards deflection, and S is any negative deflection following that. Pathological Q waves are defined as Q waves greater than 25% of the QRS complex, with a width greater than 40 milliseconds. They can indicate previous ischemia. There should be progression from V1 to V6, where the S wave is initially greater than the R wave, but then at around V3 or V4, the R wave becomes greater than the S wave. Poor progression can also indicate previous ischemia. The ST segment is next, representing the interval between ventricular depolarization and repolarization. It extends from the end of the S wave to the start of the T wave. This is a famous part of the ECG, as elevation of this segment may indicate an ST elevation myocardial infarction, as well as other conditions like pericarditis. In cases of ST elevation, it's important to look for reciprocal changes in opposite leads. For example, ST elevation in anterior or lateral leads may have reciprocal ST depressions in the inferior leads. Depressions of this portion generally is an abnormal finding that can also indicate ischemia. It's worth noting that it's difficult to interpret the ST segment in people with bundle branch blocks, therefore more specific criteria are needed. Another feature to be aware of is the J point, which is where the S wave ends and the ST segment begins, as it can be raised, causing the appearance of ST elevation. This is also known as benign early repolarization and tends to happen in people under the age of 60. It's also likely to be present in multiple leads not corresponding to a specific territory and will not have reciprocal changes and will not change over time, as you would expect with acute ischemia. T waves indicate repolarization of the ventricles and can be described as tall, flat, inverted, or even biphasic. In most cases, they will be positive and concordant with the QRS complex, but in cases where they are negative, they are known as T-wave inversions. This is normal in V1, AVR and lead 3, and can also persist from childhood in some people in V2 and V3. Inverted T-waves in the absence of ST changes can indicate a historic ischemic event. The classic example of tall T-waves is hyperkalemia, and biphasic T-waves, meaning T-waves that have both a positive and negative component, are usually due to ischemia or hypokalemia. The interval between the start of the Q wave and the end of the T wave is the QT interval, and it represents the time taken from the start of ventricular depolarization to the end of repolarization. It gets shorter with faster heart rates and longer with slower heart rates, so it needs to be corrected for the heart rate for interpretation. Classically, this is using Bizet's formula. Its normal value is generally above 360 milliseconds and less than 440 milliseconds in males or less than 460 milliseconds in females. It's important to remember this, as prolongation can predispose to potentially lethal arrhythmias like ventricular tachycardia or torsades. U waves are other waves that occasionally appear after the T waves, most commonly as a result of electrolyte imbalances or hypothermia. Using all of this information, you can categorize the ECG. Tachycardia is generally divided into broad or narrow complex, and then further into regular or irregular. Bradycardia can be divided based on the presence or absence of P waves, then further into if every P wave is followed by a QRS complex or not. This is not an exhaustive list, but covers some general arrhythmias. Overall, the ECG is a snapshot of the activity of the heart at the time it was captured. Therefore, it needs to be correlated with the history of how the patient presented and why the ECG was indicated in the first place. You also need to consider changes over time, for example, in myocardial ischemia. Another good example is syncope or palpitations due to an arrhythmia. Unless the patient's heart was in an arrhythmia at the time of the ECG, it won't necessarily be seen. Therefore, longer monitoring with a Holter monitor may be used. For further reading and practice, I would recommend using the Life in the Fast Lane website, which is the main reference for this video, as they have a comprehensive resource to improve your ECG reading skills.